paralyzing at best. Paralyzing with just a scratch. He should be dead, or dying.
"What do you want?"
he rasped, eyes darting between her and Abraxos, who was busy monitoring the skies for any other attackers, his wings rustling with impatience. The king was buying himself time, while his wound healed. Magic. Only the strongest magic could have kept him from death. Manon snapped, "Quiet," and hauled him to his feet. He didn't flinch at her touch, or at the iron nails that snagged and ripped through his jacket. He was heavier than she'd estimated, as if he'd packed on more muscle beneath those clothes, too. But with her immortal strength, heaving him to a standing position required little energy. She'd forgotten how much taller he was. Face to face, Dorian panted as he stared down at her and breathed,
"Hello, witchling."
Some ancient predatory part of her awoke at the half-smile. It sat up, cocking its ears toward him. Not a whiff of fear. Interesting. Manon purred back, "Hello, princeling." Abraxos gave a warning growl, and Manon whipped her head to discover another wyvern sailing hard and fast for them. "Go," she said, letting him support himself as she hauled open the tower door. The screams of the men levels below rose to meet them. Dorian sagged against the wall, as if focusing all his attention on staying upright. "Is there another exit? Another way out?" The king assessed her with a frankness that had her snarling. Behind them, as if the mother had stretched out her hand, a mighty wind buffeted the wyvern and rider away from the tower, sending them tumbling into the city. Even Abraxos roared, clinging to the tower stones so hard the rock cracked beneath his claws.
"There are passages,"
the king said.
"But you..."
"Then find them. Get out." He didn't move from his spot against the wall.
"Why?"
The pale line still sliced across his throat, so stark against the golden tan of his skin. But she did not take questioning from mortals, not even kings, not anymore. So she ignored his question and said, "Parrington is not as he seems. He is a demon in a mortal body, and has shed his former skin to don a new one. A golden-haired man. He breeds evil in Morath that he plans to unleash any day now. This is a taste." She flicked an iron-tipped hand to the destruction around them. "A way to break your spirits and win favor from other kingdoms by casting you as the enemy. Rally your forces before he is given a chance to grow his numbers to an unconquerable size. He means to take not just this continent, but the whole of Irelia."
"Why would his crowned rider tell me this?"
"My reasons are none of your concern. Flee." Again, that mighty wind blasted the castle, shoving back any approaching forces, setting the stones groaning. A wind that smelled of pine and snow, a familiar, strange scent. Ancient, and clever, and cruel.
"You killed that witch."
Indeed, the sentinel's blood freckled the stones. It coated Windcleaver and her discarded helmet. Witch killer. Manon shoved the thought away, along with his implied question. "You owe me a life debt, King of Otterlan. Prepare yourself for the day I come to claim it." His sensuous mouth tightened.
"Fight with us. Now. Fight with us now against him."
Through the doorway, screams and battle cries rent the air. Witches had managed to land somewhere, had infiltrated the castle. It'd be a matter of moments before they were found. And if the king was not gone... She yanked him off the wall and shoved him into the stairwell. His legs buckled, and he braced a tan hand against the ancient stone wall as he shot her a glare over a broad shoulder. A glare. Do you not know death when you see it? She hissed, low and vicious.
I have seen death, and worse, he said,
those sapphire eyes frozen, as he surveyed her from head to armored boot tip and back again.
The death you'd offer is kind compared to that.
It struck something in her, but the king was already limping down the stairs, a hand braced on the wall, moving so damn slowly while that poison worked its way out of him, his magic surely battling with everything it had to keep him on this side of life. The door at the base of the tower shattered. Dorian halted, at the four yellow-legged sentinels who rushed in, snarling up the hollow center of the tower. The witches paused, blinking at their wing leader. Windcleaver twitched in her hand. Kill him. Kill him now, before they could spread the word that she'd been spotted with him. Shit, shit, shit! Manon didn't have to decide. In a whirlwind of steel, the yellow legs died before they could turn toward the warrior who exploded through the doorway. Silver hair, tattooed face and neck, and slightly pointed ears. The source of that wind. Dorian swore, staggering down a step. But the Fey warrior's eyes were on her. Only lethal rage flickered there. The air in Manon's throat choked away into nothing. A strangled sound came out of her, and she stumbled back, clawing at her throat as if she could carve an airway. But the male's magic held firm. He'd kill her for what she'd tried to do to his queen, for the arrow Asterin had shot, meaning to strike the queen's heart, an arrow he had jumped in front of. Manon crashed to her knees. The king was instantly at her side, studying her for a heartbeat before he roared down the stairs. No! That was all it took. Air flooded her mouth, her lungs, and Manon gasped, back arching as she drank it in. Her kind had no magical shields against attacks like that. Only when most desperate, most enraged, could a witch summon the core of magic in her, with devastating consequences. Even the most bloodthirsty and soulless of them only whispered of that act. The yielding. Dorian's face swam in her watery vision. Manon still gasped for that fresh, life-saving air, as he said,
Find me when you change your mind, Blackbeak.
Then the king was gone. Chapter 8 Rowan Whitethorn had flown without food or water or rest for 2 days. He'd still reached Rifthold too late. The capital was in chaos under the claws of the witches and their wyverns. He'd seen enough cities fall over the centuries to know that this one was done for. Even if the people rallied, it would only be to meet their deaths head first. The witches had already brought down Aelin's glass wall, another calculated move by Erewhon. It had been an effort to leave the innocent to fight on their own, to race hard and fast for the stone castle in the king's tower. He had one order, given to him by his queen. He'd still come too late, but not without a glimmer of hope. Dorian Havilliard stumbled as they hurried down the castle hallway, Rowan's keen ears and sense of smell keeping them from areas where the fighting raged. If the secret tunnels were watched, if they could not reach the sewers, Rowan calculated plan after plan. None ended well.
This way,
the king panted. It was the first thing Dorian had said since rushing down the stairs. They were in a residential part of the palace Rowan had only seen from his scouting outside, in hawk form. The queen's quarters.
There's a secret exit from my mother's bedroom.
The pale white doors to the queen's suite were locked. Rowan blasted through them with half a thought, wood splintering and impaling the lavish furniture, the art on the walls, baubles and valuables shattered.
Sorry, Rowan said to the king,
not sounding like it at all. His magic flickered, a distant flutter to let him know it was draining. 2 days of riding the winds at breakneck speed, then fighting off those wyverns outside, had taken its toll. Dorian surveyed the casual damage.
Someone would have done it anyway.
No feeling, no sorrow behind it. He hurried through the room, limping a bit. If the king had possessed a fraction less magic, he might have succumbed to the wyvern's venomous tail. Dorian reached a large gilded portrait of a beautiful auburn-haired young woman with a sapphire-eyed babe in her arms. The king looked at it for a heartbeat longer than necessary, enough to tell Rowan everything. But Dorian hauled the painting toward him. It pulled away to reveal a small trap door. Rowan saw to it that the king went inside first, candle in hand, before using his magic to float the painting back into its resting place, then shutting the door behind them. The hall was cramped, the stones dusty, but the wind ahead whispered of open spaces, of dampness and mold. Rowan sent a tendril of magic to probe the stairs they now strode down, and the many halls ahead. No sign of the cave-in from when they'd destroyed the clock tower. No signs of enemies lying in wait, or the corrupt reek of the Vogue and their beasts. A small mercy. His fey ears picked up the muffled screams and shouts of the dying above them.
I should stay,
Dorian said softly. A gift of the king's magic, then, the enhanced hearing. Raw magic that could grant him any gifts, ice, flame, healing, heightened senses and strength, perhaps shape-shifting, if he tried.
You are more useful to your people alive,
Rowan said, his voice rough against the stones. Exhaustion nagged at him, but he shoved it aside. He'd rest when they were safe. The king didn't respond. Rowan said,
I have seen many cities fall. I have seen entire kingdoms fall. And the destruction I saw as I flew in was thorough enough that even with your considerable gifts, there is nothing you could have done.
He wasn't entirely sure what they'd do if that destruction were brought to Orin's doorstep, or why Erewhon was waiting to do it. He'd think about that later.
I should die with them,
was the king's answer. They reached the bottom of the stairs, the passage now widening into breathable chambers. Rowan again snaked his magic through the many tunnels and stairs. The one to the right suggested a sewer entrance lay at its bottom. Good.
I was sent here to keep you from doing just that,
Rowan said at last. The king glanced over his shoulder at him, wincing a bit as the motion stretched his still-healing skin. Where Rowan suspected a gaping wound had been minutes before, now only an angry red scar peeped through the side of his torn jacket. Dorian said,
You were going to kill her.
He knew whom the king meant.
Why did you tell me not to?
So the king told him of the encounter, as they descended deeper into the castle's bowels.
I wouldn't trust her, Rowan said, after Dorian had finished. But perhaps the gods will throw us a bone. Perhaps the Blackbeak heir will join our cause.
If her crimes weren't discovered first. But even if they only had 13 witches in their wyverns, if that coven was the most skilled of all the Iron Teeth, it could mean the difference between Orinth falling or standing against Erewhon. They reached the castle sewers. Even the rats were fleeing through the small stream entrance, as if the bellowing of the wyverns were a death knell. They passed an archway sealed off by collapsed stones, no doubt from the hellfire eruption this summer. Aelin's passageway, Rowan realized with a tug deep in his chest. And a few steps ahead, An old pool of dried blood stained the stones along the water's edge. A human reek lingered around it, tainted and foul.
"She gutted Archer Finn right there,"
Dorian said, following his stare. Rowan didn't let himself think about it, or that these fools had unwittingly given an assassin a room that connected to their queen's chambers. There was a boat moored to a stone post, its hull almost rotted through, but solid enough, and the grate to the little river snaking past the castle remained open. Rowan again speared his magic into the world, tasting the air beyond the sewers. No wings cleaved it, no blood scented its path. A quiet eastern part of the castle. If the witches had been smart, they'd have sentries monitoring every inch of it. But from the screaming and pleading going on above, Rowan knew the witches were too lost in their bloodlust to think straight, at least for a few minutes. Rowan jerked his chin to the boat.
"Get in."
Dorian frowned at the mold and rot.
"We'll be lucky if it doesn't collapse around us."
"You," Rowan corrected. "Around you, not me."
"Get in."
Dorian heard his tone and wisely got in.
"What are you—"
Rowan yanked off his cloak and threw it over the king.
"Lie down and put that over you."
Face a bit pale, Dorian obeyed. Rowan snapped the ropes with a flash of his knives. He shifted, wings flapping loudly enough to inform Dorian what had happened. Rowan's magic groaned and strained while it pushed what looked like an empty, meandering vessel out of the sewers, as if someone had accidentally loosed it. Flying through the sewer mouth, he shielded the boat with a wall of hard air, containing the king's scent and keeping any stray arrows from piercing it. Rowan looked back only once as he flew down the little river, high above the boat. Only once. At the city that had forged and broken and sheltered his queen. Her glass wall was no more than chunks and shards gleaming in the streets and the grass. These past weeks of travel had been torture, the need to claim her, taste her, driving him out of his wits. And given what Darrow had said, perhaps, despite his promise when he'd left, it had been a good thing that they had not taken that final step. It had been in the back of his mind long before Darrow and his horseshit decrees. He was a prince, but in name only. He had no army, no money. The substantial funds he possessed were in Dorinel, and Maeve would never allow him to claim them. They'd likely already been distributed amongst his meddlesome cousins, along with his lands and residences. It wouldn't matter if some of them, the cousins he'd been raised with, might refuse to accept out of typical Whitethorn loyalty and stubbornness. All Rowan now had to offer his queen were the strength of his sword, the depth of his magic, and the loyalty of his heart. Such things did not win wars. He scented the despair on her, though her face had hidden it when Darrow had spoken. And he knew her fiery soul. She would do it. Consider marriage to a foreign prince or lord, even if this thing between them, even if he knew it was not mere lust, or even just love. This thing between them, the force of it, could devour the world. And if they picked it, picked them, it might very well cause the end of it. It was why he had not uttered the words he'd meant to tell her for some time, even when every instinct was roaring for him to do it, as they parted. And maybe having Aelin only to lose her was his punishment for letting his mate die. His punishment for finally letting go of that grief and loathing. The lap of waves was barely audible over the roar of wyverns and the innocents screaming for help that would never come. He shut out the ache in his chest, the urge to turn around. This was war. These lands would endure far worse in the coming days and months. His queen, no matter how he tried to shield her, would endure far worse. By the time the boat drifted down the little river snaking toward the Avery Delta, a white-tailed hawk soaring high above it, the walls of the stone castle were bathed in blood. Chapter 9. Elide Locken knew she was being hunted. For 3 days now, she'd tried to lose whatever tracked her through the endless sprawl of Oakwald, and in the process she herself had become lost. 3 days hardly sleeping, barely stopping long enough to scavenge for food and water. She turned south once, to backtrack and shake it off her trail. She'd wound up heading a day in that direction. Then west, toward the mountains, then south, possibly east. She couldn't tell. She'd been running then, Oakwald so dense that she could hardly track the sun. And without a clear view of the stars, not daring to stop and find an easy tree to climb, she couldn't find the Lord of the North, her beacon home. By noon on the third day, she was close to weeping, from exhaustion, from rage, from bone-deep fear. Whatever took its time hunting her would surely take its time killing her. Her knife trembled in her hand as she paused in a clearing, a swift, nimble stream dancing through it. Her leg ached, her ruined, useless leg. She'd offer the Dark God her soul for a few hours of peace and safety. Elide dropped the knife into the grass beside her, falling to her knees before the stream, and drinking swift and deep. Water filled the gaps in her belly left by berries and roots. She refilled her canteen, hands shaking uncontrollably. Shaking so hard, she dropped the metal cap into the stream. She swore, plunging into the cold water up to her elbows as she fumbled for the cap, patting the rocks and slick tendrils of riverweed, begging for one solitary break. Her fingers closed on the cap as the first howl sounded through the forest. Elide and the forest went still. She had heard dogs baying, had listened to the unearthly choruses of wolves when she'd been hauled from Paranth down to Morath. This was neither. This was. There had been nights in Morath when she'd been yanked from sleep because of howls like that. Howls she'd believed were imagined when they didn't sound again. No one ever mentioned them. But there was that sound. That sound. We shall create wonders that will make the world tremble. Oh, gods. Elide blindly screwed the cap onto the canteen. Whatever it might be, it was closing in fast. Maybe a tree, high up a tree, might save her. Hide her. Maybe. Elide twisted to shove her canteen into her bag. But a warrior was crouched across the stream, a long, wicked knife balanced on his knee. His black eyes devoured her, his face harsh beneath equally dark shoulder-length hair, as he said in a voice like granite, "Unless you want to be lunch, girl, I suggest you come with me." A small, ancient voice whispered in her ear that she'd at last found her relentless hunter. And they'd now both become someone else's prey. Lorcan Salvatierre listened to the rising snarls in the ancient wood, and knew they were likely about to die. Well, the girl was about to die, either at the claws of whatever pursued them, or at the end of Lorcan's blade. He hadn't yet decided. Human. The cinnamon and elderberry scent of her was utterly human, and yet that other smell remained. That tinge of darkness fluttering about her like a hummingbird's wings. He might have suspected she'd summoned the beasts, were it not for the tang of fear staining the air, and for the fact that he'd been tracking her for 3 days now, letting her lose herself in the tangled labyrinth of Oakwald, and had found little to indicate she was under Vog thrall. Lorcan rose to his feet, and her dark eyes widened as she took in his towering height. She remained kneeling by the stream, a dirty hand reaching for the dagger she'd foolishly discarded in the grass. She wasn't stupid or desperate enough to lift it against him.
"Who are you?"
Her hoarse voice was low, not the sweet high thing he'd expected from her delicate, fully curved frame. Low and cold and steady.
"If you want to die," Lorcan said, "then go ahead. Keep asking questions."
He turned away, northward. And that was when the second set of snarling began, from the other direction. Two packs, closing in. Grass and cloth rustled, and when he looked, the girl was on her feet, dagger angled, face sickly pale as she realized what was happening. They were being herded.
"East or west?" Lorcan said.
In the 5 centuries he'd been slaughtering his way across the world, he'd never heard snarls like that from any manner of beast. He thumbed free his hatchet from where it was strapped at his side.
"East,"
the girl breathed, eyes darting to either direction.
I was told to stay out of the mountains. Wyverns, large winged beasts, patrol them."
"I know what a wyvern is," he said.
Some temper snapped in her dark eyes at his tone, but the fear washed it away. She began backing toward the direction she'd chosen. One of the creatures loosed a keening cry. Not a canine sound. No, this was high-pitched, screeching, like a bat, but deeper, hungrier.
"Run,"
he said.
She did.
Lorcan had to give the girl credit, despite the still injured leg, despite the exhaustion that had made her sloppy these past few days. She bolted like a doe through the trees, her terror likely leeching away any pain. Lorcan leaped the wide stream in an easy movement, closing the distance between them in mere heartbeats. Slow. These humans were so damned slow. Her breathing was already ragged as she hauled herself up a hill, making enough noise to alert their trackers. Crashing from the brush behind them. From the south. 2 or 3 from the sound of it. Big from the snapping branches and thudding of footfalls. The girl hit the top of the hill, stumbling. She stayed upright, and Lorcan eyed the leg again. There was no point in having tracked her for so long if she died now. For a heartbeat, he contemplated the weight in his jacket, the word key tucked away. His magic was strong, the strongest of any demi-fey male in any kingdom, any realm. But if he used the key... If he used the key, then he'd deserve the damnation it had called down upon him. So Lorcan flung out a net of his power behind them, an invisible barrier wafting black tendrils of wind. The girl stiffened, whipping her head to him as the power rippled away in a wave. Her skin blanched further, but she continued, half falling, half running down the hill. The impact of 4 massive bodies against his magic struck a moment later. The tang of her blood, as she sliced herself open on rock and root, shoved itself up his nose. She was nowhere near fast enough. Lorcan opened his mouth to order her to hurry, when the invisible wall snapped. Not snapped, but cracked. As if those beasts had cleaved it. Impossible. No one could get through those shields. Not even Rowan Rudding Whitethorn. But sure enough, the magic had been sundered. The girl hit the gully at the bottom of the hill, near sobbing at the flat expanse of forest sprawling ahead. She sprinted, dark braid thrashing, pack bouncing against her slim back. Lorcan moved after her, eyeing the trees to either side as the snarling and rustling began again. They were being herded. But toward what? And if these things had ripped his magic apart? It had been a long, long while since he'd had a new enemy to study. To break.
Keep going,
he growled. And the girl didn't so much as look over her shoulder, as Lorkin slammed to a stop between two towering oaks. He'd been spiraling down into his magic for days, planning to use it on the human but not girl when he grew bored of stalking her. Now his body was rife with it, the power aching to get out. Lorkin flipped his axe in his hand. Once. Twice. The metal singing through the dense forest. A chill wind edged in black mist danced between the fingers of his other hand. Not wind like Whitethorn's, and not light and flame like Whitethorn's bitch queen. Not even raw magic like the new king of Otterlin. No. Lorkin's magic was that of will, of death, and thought, and destruction. There was no name for it. Not even his queen had known what it was, where it had come from. A gift from the dark god. From Hellas, Maeve had mused. A dark gift for her dark warrior. And left it at that. A wild smile danced on Lorkin's lips as he let his magic rise to the surface, let its black roar fill his veins. He had crumbled cities with this power. He did not think these beasts, however fell, would fare much better. They slowed as they closed in, sensing a predator was waiting, sizing him up. For the first time in a damn long while, Lorkin had no words for what he saw. Maybe he should have killed the girl. Death at his hand would be a mercy compared to what snarled before him, crouching low on massive flesh-shredding claws. Not a wordhound. No. These things were far worse. Their skin was a mottled blue, so dark as to be almost black. Each long, lightly muscled limb had been ruthlessly crafted and honed. For the long claws at the end of their hands, five-fingered hands, now curled, as if in anticipation of a strike. But it was not their bodies that stunned him. It was the way the creatures halted, smiling beneath their smashed-in bat-like noses to reveal double rows of needle-like teeth, and then stood on their hind legs. Stood to their full height, as a crawling man might rise. They dwarfed him by a foot at least. And the physical attributes that seemed unnervingly familiar were confirmed, when the one closest to him opened its hideous mouth and said, "We have not tasted your kind's flesh yet." Lorkin's axe twitched up. "I can't say I've had the pleasure either." There were very, very few beasts who could speak in the tongues of mortal and fey. Most had developed it through magic, ill-gained or blessed. But there, slitted with pleasure in anticipation of violence, gleamed dark human eyes. Whitethorn had warned of what was occurring in Morath, had mentioned the wordhounds might be the first of many awful things to be unleashed. Lorkin hadn't realized those things would be nearly 8 feet tall and part human, part whatever Erewhon had done to turn it into this. The closest one dared a step, but hissed, hissed at the invisible line he'd drawn. Lorkin's power flickered and throbbed at the poisoned claw tips of the creature as it prodded the shield. 4 against 1. Usually easy odds for him. Usually. But he bore the word key they sought, and that golden ring he'd stolen from Maeve, then given to and stolen from Aelin Galathinius, Aethryl's ring. And if they brought either to their master, then Erewhon would possess all 3 word keys, and would be able to open a door between worlds to unleash his awaiting Volg hordes upon them all. And as for Aethryl's golden ring, Lorkin had no doubt Erewhon would destroy the ring forged by Mala herself, the one object in Irelia that granted immunity to its bearer against Wordstone and the Volg. So Lorkin moved. Faster than even they could detect, he hurled his axe at the creature farthest from him, its focus pinned on its companion as it prodded his shield. They all whirled toward their companion as the axe slammed into its neck, deep and permanent. All turned away to see it fall, lethal by nature, but untrained. The beast's attention diverted for a heartbeat. Lorkin's next two knives flew. Both blades embedded to the hilt in their ridged foreheads, their heads reeling back as the blows sent them clattering to their knees. The one in the center, the one who had spoken, loosed a primal scream that set Lorkin's ears ringing. It lunged for the shield. It rebounded, the magic denser this time. Lorkin drew his longsword and a knife, and could only watch as the thing roared at the shield and slammed against it with both ruined clawed hands, and his magic, his shield, melted under its touch. It stepped through his shield like it was a doorway. Now we'll play. Lorkin crouched into a defensive stance, wondering how far the girl had made it, if she'd even turned to look at what pursued them. The sounds of her flight had faded away. Behind the creature, its companions were twitching. No, reviving. They each lifted a strong clawed hand to the daggers through their skulls and yanked them out. Metal rasped on bone. Only the one with its head now attached by a few tendons remained down. Beheading, then, even if it meant getting close enough to do so. The creature before him smiled in savage delight. "What are you?" Lorkin ground out. The two others were now on their feet, the wounds in their heads already healed, bristling with menace. "We are hunters for his dark majesty," the leader said with a mock bow. "We are the Ilkin, and we have been sent to retrieve our quarry." Those witches had dispatched these beasts for him? Cowards not to do their own hunting. The Ilkin went on, stepping toward him on legs that bent backward. "We were going to let you have a quick death. A gift." Its broad nostrils flared, scenting the silent forest. "But as you have stood between us and our prey, we will savor your long end." Not him. He was not what the wyverns had been stalking these days, what these creatures had come to claim. They had no idea what he bore, who he was. "What do you want with her?" he asked, monitoring the creeping approach of the three. "It is none of your concern," the leader said. "If there is a reward in it, I will help you." Dark, soulless eyes flashed toward him. "You do not protect the girl." Lorkin gave a shrug, praying they couldn't scent his bluff as he bought her more time, bought himself time to work out the puzzle of their power. "I don't even know her name." The three Ilkin looked at one another, a glance of question and decision. Their leader said, "She is important to our king. Retrieve her, and he will fill you with power far greater than feeble shields." Was that the price for the humans they'd once been? Magic that was somehow immune to what flowed naturally in this world? Or had the choice been taken from them, as surely as their souls had been stolen, too?
"Why is she important?"
They were now within spitting range. He wondered how long it'd take to replenish the supply of whatever power allowed them to cleave through magic. Perhaps they were buying themselves time, too. The Ilkin said, "She is a thief and a murderer. She must be brought to our king for justice." Lorkin could have sworn an invisible hand touched his shoulder. He knew that touch, had trusted it his entire life. It had kept him alive this long. A touch on his back to go forward, to fight and kill and breathe in death. A touch on his shoulder to instead run, to know that only doom waited ahead, and life lay behind. The Ilken smiled once more, its teeth bright in the gloom of the wood. As if in answer, a scream shattered from the forest behind him. Chapter 10 Elide Lachen stood before a creature birthed from a dark god's nightmares. Across the clearing, it towered over her, its talons digging into the loam of the forest floor.
"There you are,"
it hissed through teeth sharper than a fish's.
"Come with me, girl, and I will grant you a quick end."
Lies. She saw how it sized her up, claws curling as if it could already feel them shredding into her soft belly. The thing had appeared in her path as if a cloud of night had dropped it there, and had laughed when she screamed. Her knife shook as she raised it. It stood like a man, spoke like one, and its eyes, utterly soulless, yet the shape of them. They were human, too. Monstrous. What terrible mind had dreamed up such a thing? She knew the answer. Help. She needed help. But that man from the stream was likely dead at the claws of the other beasts. She wondered how long that magic of his had held out. The creature stepped toward her, its muscled legs closing the distance too quickly. She backed toward the trees, the direction she'd come from.
"Is your blood as sweet as your face, girl?"
Its grayish tongue tasted the air between them.
"Think, think, think."
What would Manon do before such a creature? Manon, she remembered, came equipped with claws and fangs of her own. But a small voice whispered in her ear,
"So do you. Use what you have."
There were other weapons than those made of iron and steel. Though her knees shook, Elide lifted her chin and met the black human eyes of the creature.
"Careful," she said,
dropping her voice into the purr Manon had so often used to frighten the wits out of everyone. Elide reached into the pocket of her coat, pulling out the shard of stone and clenching it in her fist, willing that otherworldly presence to fill the clearing, the world. She prayed the creature wouldn't look at her fist, wouldn't ask what was in it as she drawled,
"Do you think the Dark King will be pleased if you harm me?"
She looked down her nose at it, or as best as she could while standing several feet shorter.
"I have been sent to look for the girl. Do not interfere."
The creature seemed to recognize the fighting leathers then, seemed to scent that strange off-scent surrounding the rock. And it hesitated. Elide kept her face a mask of cold displeasure.
"Get out of my sight."
She almost vomited as she began stalking toward it, toward sure death. But she stomped along, prowling as Manon had so often done. Elide made herself look up into the bat-like hideous face as she passed.
"Tell your brethren that if you interfere again, I will personally oversee what delights you experience upon Morath's tables."
Doubt still danced in its eyes, along with real fear. A lucky guess, those words and phrases, based on what she'd overheard. She didn't let herself consider what had been done to make such a creature quake at the mention. Elide was 5 paces from the creature, keenly aware that her spine was now vulnerable to those shredding claws and teeth, when it asked,
"Why did you flee at our approach?"
She said without turning, in that cold, vicious voice of Manon Blackbeak,
"I do not tolerate the questions of underlings. You have already disrupted my hunt and injured my ankle with your useless attack. Pray that I do not remember your face when I return to the keep."
She knew her mistake the moment it sucked in a hissing breath. Still, She kept her legs moving, back straight.
What a coincidence, it mused, that our prey is similarly lamed.
Aneth, save her. Perhaps it had not noticed the limp until then. Fool, fool. Running would do her no good. Running would proclaim the creature had won, that it was right. She halted, as if her temper had yanked on its leash, and snapped her face toward the creature.
What is that you're hissing about?
Utter conviction. Utter rage. Again the creature paused. One chance. Just one chance. It had learned soon enough that it had been duped. Elide held its gaze. It was staring like a dead snake in the eyes. She said with that lethal quiet the witches liked to use,
"Do not make me reveal what His Dark Majesty put inside me on that table."
As if in response, the stone in her hand throbbed, and she could have sworn darkness flickered. The creature shuddered, backing away a step. Elide didn't consider what she held, as she sneered one last time and stalked away. She made it perhaps half a mile before the forest was again full of chittering life. She fell to her knees and vomited. Nothing but bile and water came out. She was so busy hurling up her guts with stupid fear and relief that she didn't notice anyone's approach until it was too late. A broad hand clamped on her shoulder, whirling her around. She drew her dagger, but too slowly. The same hand released her to slap the blade to the grass. Elide found herself staring into the dirt-splattered face of the man from the stream. No, not dirt. Blood that reeked. Black blood.
How?
She said, stumbling away a step.
You first,
he snarled, but whipped his head toward the forest behind them. She followed his gaze. Saw nothing. When she looked at his harsh face, a sword lay against her throat. She tried to fall back, but he gripped her arm, holding her as steel bit into her skin.
Why do you smell of one of them? Why do they chase you?
She'd pocketed the stone, or else she might have shown him. But movement might cause him to strike, and that small voice whispered to keep the stone concealed. She offered another truth.
Because I have spent the past several months in Morath, living amongst that scent. They seek me, because I managed to get free. I flee north, to safety.
Faster than she could see, he lowered his blade, only to slice it across her arm. A scratch, barely more than a whisper of pain. They both watched her as red blood surged and dribbled. It seemed answer enough for him.
You can call me Lorcan, he said, though she hadn't asked.
And with that, he hauled her over his broad shoulder like a sack of potatoes, and ran. Elide knew two things within seconds. That the remaining creatures, however many there were, had to be on their trail and closing in fast, had to have realized she'd bluffed her way free. And that the man, moving swift as a wind between the oaks, was Demi Fay. Lorcan ran and ran, his lungs gobbling down great gulps of the forest's stifling air. Slung over his shoulder, the girl didn't even whimper as the miles passed. He'd carried packs heavier than her over entire mountain ranges. Lorcan slowed when his strength at last began to flag, spent quicker thanks to the magic he'd used to get those three beasts into a stranglehold, battering past their natural-born immunity to it, then kill two while he pinned the other long enough to sprint for the girl. He'd been lucky. The girl, it seemed, had been smart. He jogged into a stop, setting her down hard enough that she winced, winced and hopped a bit on that hurt ankle. Her blood had flowed red instead of the reeking black that implied Vog possession, but it still didn't explain how she'd been able to intimidate that Ilkin into submission.
"Where are we going?"
she said, swinging her pack to pull out her canteen. He waited for the tears and prayers and begging. She just unscrewed the cap of the leather-coated container and swigged deep. Then, to his surprise, offered him some. Lorkin didn't take it. She merely drank again.
"We're going to the edge of the forest. To the Acanthus River."
Where are we?
The hesitation said enough. She'd calculated the risk of revealing how vulnerable she was with that question, and decided she was too desperate for the answer.
"What is your name?"
"Marion."
She held his gaze with a sort of unflinching steel that had him angling his head. "An answer for an answer." He said,
"We're in the middle of Otterlin. You were about a day's hike from the Avery River."
Marion blinked. He wondered if she even knew that, or had considered how she'd crossed the mighty body of water that had claimed ships captained by the most seasoned of men and women. She said,
"Are we running, or can I sit for a moment?"
He listened to the sounds of the forest for any hint of danger, then jerked his chin. Marion sighed as she sat on the moss and roots. She surveyed him.
"I thought all the Fae were dead. Even the Demi-Fae."
"I'm from Wendlin. And you,"
he said, brows rising slightly,
"are from Morath."
"Not from. Escaping from."
"Why? And how?"
Her narrowed eyes told him enough. She knew he still didn't believe her, not entirely, red blood or no. Yet she didn't answer, instead leaning over her legs to unlace a boot. Her fingers trembled a bit, but she got through the laces, yanking off the boot, removing the sock, and rolling up her leather pant leg to reveal shit. He'd seen plenty of ruined bodies in his day, had done plenty of ruining himself, but rarely were they left so untreated. Marion's leg was a mess of scar tissue and twisted bone, and right above her misshapen ankle lay still-healing wounds where shackles had unmistakably been. She said quietly,
"Allies of Morath are usually whole. Their dark magic could surely cure a cripple, and they surely would have no use for one."
That was why she'd managed so well with the limp. She'd had years to master it, from the coloring of the scar tissue. Marion rolled her pant leg back down, but left her foot bare, massaging it. She hissed through her teeth. He sat on a fallen log a few feet away, taking off his own pack to rifle through it.
"Tell me what you know of Morath,"
he said, and chucked her a tin of salve straight from Doranel. The girl stared at it, those sharp eyes putting together what he was, where he was from, and what that tin likely contained. When she lifted them to his face, she nodded silently in agreement of his offer. Relief from the pain for answers. She unscrewed the lid, and he caught the way her mouth parted as she breathed in the pungent herbs. Pain and pleasure danced across her face as she began rubbing the salve into her old injuries. And as she worked, she spoke. Marion told him of the Iron Teeth host, of the Wing Leader and the 13, of the armies camped around the Mountain Keep, of the places where only screaming echoed, of the countless forges and blacksmiths. She described her own escape. Without warning, she didn't know how, the castle had exploded. She'd seen it as her chance, disguising herself in a witch's attire, grabbing one of their packs and running. In the chaos, no one had chased her.
"I've been running for weeks," she said. "Apparently, I've barely covered half the distance."
"To where?"
Marion looked northward.
"Terrasen."
Lorcan stifled a snarl.
"You're not missing much."
"Have you news of it?"
Alarm filled those eyes.
"No,"
he said, shrugging. She finished rubbing her foot and ankle.
"What's in Terrasen? Your family?"
He had not asked why she'd been brought to Morath. He didn't particularly care to hear her sad story. Everyone had one, he'd found. The girl's face tightened.
"I owe a debt to a friend. Someone who helped me get out of Morath. She bade me to find someone named Selena Sardothian. So that is my first task. Learning who she is, where she is. Terrasen seems like a better place to start than Otterlin."
No guile. No whisper of this meeting being anything but chance.
"And then,"
the girl went on, the brightness in her eyes growing,
"I need to find Aelin Galathinius, the Queen of Terrasen."
It was an effort not to go for his sword.
"Why?"
Marion glanced toward him, as if she'd somehow even forgotten he was there.
"I heard a rumor that she's raising an army to stop the one in Morath. I plan to offer my services."
"Why?"
he said again. Aside from the wits that had kept her out of the Ilkin's claws, he saw no other reason for the bitch queen to need the girl. Marion's full mouth tightened.
"Because I am from Terrasen, and believed my queen dead. And now she is alive, and fighting. So I will fight with her, so that no other girls will be taken from their homes, and brought to Morath and forgotten."
Lorcan debated telling her what he knew, that her two quests were one and the same. But that would lead to questions from her, and he was in no mood.
"Why do you wish to go to Morath? Everyone else is fleeing from it."
"I was sent by my mistress to stop the threat it poses."
"You're one man, male."
Not an insult, but Lorcan stared her down anyway.
"I have my skills, just as you have yours."
Her eyes darted to his hands, now crusted in dried black blood. He wondered, though, if she was imagining the magic that had sparked there. He waited for Marion to ask more, but she pulled on her sock, then her boot, and laced it up.
"We shouldn't rest for long."
"Indeed."
She eased to her feet, wincing a bit, but gave an appreciative frown toward her leg. Lorcan took that as answer enough regarding the salve's efficiency. She bent down to retrieve the tin, her dark curtain of hair sweeping over her face. At some point, it had come free of its braid. She rose, chucking him the tin. He caught it in one hand.
"Once we reach the Acanthus, what then?"
He pocketed the tin in his cloak.
"There are countless merchants' caravans and seasonal carnivals wandering the plains. I passed many on my way down here. Some might even be trying to cross the river. We'll get in with one of them. Hide out. Once we've crossed and wandered far enough onto the grasslands, you'll take one north, I'll head south."
Her eyes narrowed slightly, but Marion said,
"Why travel with me at all?"
"There are more details regarding Morath's interior that I want from you. I'll keep you from danger, and you'll provide them for me."
The sun began its final descent, bathing the woods in gold. Marion frowned slightly.
"You swear it? That you will protect me?
I didn't leave you to the Ilken today, did I?
She eyed him with a clarity and frankness.